Hey gang, if you're in Austin and you have a musician on your Christmas list and you want to find a way to get them out of your living room and maybe out of your garage, you can get them a gift certificate to Space Rehearsal and Recording. Space is a state-of-the-art, affordable venue for rehearsal and recording located just a few short miles south of downtown Austin. You can go to spaceatx.com or call them at 512-448-9518. Get that special musician in your life the gift that they really need. A space to rehearse. Space Rehearsal and Recording. Let's get down.
You may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here?
Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. Happy Monday, man. I hope you guys all had a great weekend. I have a great big show for you today, man, and a great big week of shows. Three shows this week. That's why this show's coming out on Monday. Today, I have the Welch family, Kevin Welch, Dustin Welch, and Savannah Welch from the Trishas, all on the show. They're doing the Welch family throwdown this week, which is happening all around Texas on Friday, December 17th in Wimberley, Texas at Susanna's Kitchen. Friday, December 18th, the Woodlands Texans at Do-Si-Do. Saturday, December 19th in Fort Worth at the Live Oak Music Hall and Lounge. Yeah, I have a great conversation with all three of them. They're a beautiful family. They're fantastic people. They've been doing this Welch family thing for the last few years. Around Christmas time, they go out and play a bunch of songs. Not necessarily Christmas songs. I think they throw in a Christmas song, a weird Christmas song called Santa Had a Name. We talk about it in the show. So stick around. It's a great conversation with Savannah, Dustin, and their dad, Kevin Welch, the great songwriter from Nashville who's moved to Austin a few years ago. Great conversation. Before we get to that, I get to talk to the great Dwight Twilley. Yeah, I had a Skype conversation with Dwight Twilley. He is coming into town this week and playing a solo show Thursday, December 17th at the Hole in the Wall with special guest Ron Flint. Ron starts at 9. And Dwight Twilley goes on at 10. So without further ado, let's talk to the great Dwight Twilley. So, there was a recording studio there. And the house engineer guy had my whole band smoking one night because of that same thing. That if you look at the pictures of the Beatles,
of course,
they're all smoking. So for some, it has to change the sound of the room in some way.
Oh, you know, it warms everything up.
Yeah.
You think anybody walked in and said, "Excuse me, Mr. Sinatra"?
Yeah. Put out your cigarette.
Sorry, Dean.
Sorry, Dino. Time to extinguish your smoke. So, Dwight, earlier...
Let it snow, but don't let it smoke, baby.
Hey, so last year, or earlier this year when we spoke, which was almost a year ago, you were talking about... You just put out Always, and when I was asking you if you did solo shows, you were like, well, I'm thinking I might do some shows, and now you've done the Look Ma No Band tour this year.
I know, it's really weird.
Yeah.
I'm terrified. I've never done it in my whole life.
Well, how's it...
And all over the country.
Yeah, and how's it been going?
Well, it's surprising, because I probably told you at the time that I was just kind of, you know, people always were asking me to, you know, do something acoustic. People are going to love it, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought, yeah, sure. And then a lot of times I'd go to do like radio, you know, the radio interview, and somebody would be live on the air and someone would pull out acoustics. Like, can you do a couple tunes?
Yeah.
And so, you know, you consider that kind of thing. Everybody's doing it. You might as well.
Right.
And then, you know, but then there's always some guy that right when you're live on the air, well, can play one of the hits.
Right.
You know, and it's just my songs, you know, my hits really, they have so many vocals and intricate parts. They don't really translate well to an acoustic and one voice.
Right.
So I always was uncomfortable about that. But I you know, I don't need to go into the whole tour. I was in Canada and someone talked us into doing like three songs.
Right.
And, I thought, well, heck, I can do three songs. I don't have to play any of the hits, you know. And I was so surprised.
Right.
At the reaction from the people. And then we went on to L.A. for some other business, and someone had invited us to play somewhere.
Right.
And we was billed as disjointly with a guitar. And we were just, we were amazed by the way that, you know, you couldn't get in the door. People were out in the street. And since then, so I, you know, started kind of getting comfortable with it. And not that I'm getting any better at it.
Right.
Comfortable with it. And there's a couple of things about it that are actually very cool. You know, my time in my life with the body of work that I've done.
Yeah.
Is, you know, I really enjoy going out with the band, which we recently just did a show with the band. It was so much fun. And all the bells and whistles. And yeah. I really love to rock. And so there's so many songs that I would just never even consider doing.
Right.
Excuse me, because they don't rock.
Right. So you're bringing those out?
Huh?
You're bringing those out?
Well, yeah. And I think it really, it's a lot of songs that people have always wanted to hear, but I've never done them.
That's awesome.
And it's fun for me.
Yeah.
Because I've been doing all these rock and roll songs all these years. And a lot of times we think, wouldn't it be cool to do that song? Everybody loves that song on this album. But, you know, in the middle of this rock and roll show, you really just don't want to bring the whole audience down and get into some ballad or something.
Right.
And, yeah. So now I'm able to kind of surprise the audience, I think, and a lot of times, and go like, you know, they can't believe I'm playing the song that they've known for years.
Right.
Or I've never heard. And actually, a few people have even came up to me after some of the shows more than once and said, I never really knew you until I saw this show.
Wow.
So we've really been kind of having fun with it.
That's great, man. And are you? Did you find ways, like, rediscover songs, like playing them in a new way like that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, you know, always fun.
I think I have a few surprises.
Yeah.
That people will go, I can't believe he's playing that.
What's the, I'm drawing a blank, I don't have it written down, the name of the Green Blimp album?
Yeah, the Green Blimp.
Yeah, the Green Blimp. That album, I listened to that today, and I don't think I'd really listened to the whole thing like I did today, and it's fucking great, man.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, are you playing pretty anything off of that?
I hate to say anything.
Okay, I like that.
I don't
really
want to tell people what I'm going to play.
All right.
So, but let's just say that I don't think you'll be disappointed.
No. I think it's going to be exciting enough to get to see Dwight Twilley play live by himself, that people will hold it. And listen, it's going to be this Thursday, December 17th at the Hole in the Wall, with special guest Ron Flint. Ron goes on at 9, and you go on at 10.
Yeah, what a pleasure it's going to be to work with Ron, one of my dear friends. And as you know, he plays on the new album.
Yeah.
And so does his old buddy Steve Allen.
Oh yeah, is he
working on the new album?
Excellent. Is he gonna? Is Ron's just playing by himself as well, right?
Yeah, I wish Steve was coming in too. He is a, you know, he's a hoot.
Yeah.
He sat in with us on a show at Halloween night here in Tulsa.
Oh really?
At Brady Theater, and we just had a gas.
That's awesome.
He's a great guy.
Yeah. What, another thing that we talked about earlier in the year, you talked about that you were going to try and do something with your art in the form of like a book or something.
Yeah, I'm working on that right now. I've kind of reached a milestone.
Great.
I've captured 100 pieces of art so far.
Oh, fantastic.
I've been working on for some time. You know, I've started with a certain size, but a lot of them are very old.
Right.
And so I'm doing scanning and having to clean up little blotches, wrinkles, dots, dust, things like that. But I finally got to the point where I now have 100 pieces of art captured.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I'm going to start on another road case of work. And I'll be probably after the holidays, I'm going to start working on the second 100.
Right.
And where I'm going with this, I'm not exactly sure. I just know that I want to do it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's going to be a book, a film, both, or where I'm going with it. But it is a project that I'm real seriously involved in right now.
That's awesome. That's good to hear. I'm looking forward to whatever it is that you do. Do you have any plans for 2016?
You kind of know in a way because, you know, I did the cover art of the new album Always.
Right, yeah.
So you have a rough idea.
Right.
I did a cover of the Christmas album.
Right.
Which is, by the way, very coveted at the moment here in the holidays.
Yeah, of course.
Still enough. So many people are ordering the Christmas album right now. It's kind of fun.
I need to order that.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
We're very proud of it.
That's good.
Because you know, it's all brand new Twilly songs.
Yeah.
But unlike other Christmas albums, every song on the album is a different genre.
Oh, that's awesome.
So you've got a rockabilly Christmas song. You've got a novelty Christmas song, Christmas with the Martians.
And people can find it at DwightTwilly.com, right?
Oh, you know they can. They are.
Classes, yeah.
Believe me, every day.
I noticed that you put out Always on Vinyl this year. That's great. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to picking up a copy of that at the show.
Yeah, we will have some there.
Good.
They are kind of hard to hold on, but we hope to have, you know, at least a minor supply there.
Yeah. Are you glad? Because I know that when we talked also earlier this year, you were talking about one of the things that had bummed you out about the new music thing is that the quality of the sound has gone down and people don't really seem to care.
Yeah, of course. I'm sure it does a lot of people. Because most, you know, like these things that I'm listening to right now, listening to as we discuss on these earbuds,
yeah.
We were playing music, you're literally hearing about 30% of the quality of any recording you listen to.
Yeah.
That's a lot lost.
Yeah, that is.
And it's like a whole generation that are used to listening to music that way, and they're missing out on what we used to enjoy.
Well, wasn't Neil Young spearheading some bigger file?
I don't know.
MP3 kind of thing for a while.
You know, I don't really know, but I've heard something about that. I know what you're talking about.
I feel like he's really one of the only artists out there saying anything about that.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone else is just trying to hang in there as best they can.
Well, I've spoke about it, as you know.
Yeah, of course. Well, you and him is what I meant. So what are the plans for 2016? You gonna kick it in the smoking studio and maybe give us another record or?
Well, you know, we kind of made a vow to ourselves because we've been knocking out record after record after record.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Over the past decade, really. And we did the Green Blimp, I can't even remember them all, Soundtrack and Always, just bang, bang, bang. Bang
right.
Bang. And so we promised ourselves that we're going to stop recording for a while, which is really hard for us to do because we are addicted to it.
Yeah,
but we are going to have some product on CD that will be released this coming year.
Great.
And that will be a little bit of a surprise. It will be unexpected, I think. And we're probably going to continue on. You know, I'll be doing shows with the band here and there. But with the response we've been getting to the acoustic show, I think that we're going to continue to wander around and show up places with the acoustic and maybe take it overseas.
That's fantastic.
Continue to focus on my project with my artwork.
Yeah. Well, that's great. People can get all of your music and find out all about you and your endeavors at DwightTwilly.com. They can also go to Dwight Twilly Fan World on Facebook. And this Thursday, December 17th, The Hole in the Wall in Austin, Texas, with special guest Ron Flint, Dwight Twilly, solo.
Thank you, Johnny.
Yeah, man. I'm excited about it, and I will see you. I will see you at the show. Hopefully we can hang out and have a chat afterwards.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, Dwight, thank you so much for doing the show again, and you guys have a great night.
Thank you, John.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Legendary Mr. Dwight Twilly. How cool I get to Skype with him, man. As a fanboy, I freak out. I'm like, ah, shit, I'm Skyping with Dwight Twilly. If you live in Austin, man, come out to The Hole in the Wall. Thursday night, December 17th. That's this Thursday. Dwight Twilly and special guest Ron Flint. Ron goes on at 9. Dwight goes on at 10. Mr. Twilly, great conversation. Nice to talk to him. And I'm looking forward to meeting him face-to-face and seeing Dwight Twilly play solo acoustic. So get out there and check it out. This week is a big week of music. My guest today, the Welch family, Kevin, Dustin, and Savannah, are doing the Welch family throwdown this week, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Thursday, December 17th in Wimberley, Texas at Susanna's Kitchen. Friday, December 18th in the Woodlands at Do-Si-Do. Saturday, December 19th, Fort Worth at the Live Oak Music Hall and Lounge. Great conversation with all these guys. I'm thinking about going to Kevin's songwriter workshops that he has. Seems really cool. It's like a retreat. But listen, I have a great conversation with Kevin, Dustin, and Savannah. They're a beautiful family, extremely talented, and enjoy our conversation. It was great. We had it Saturday afternoon when I got back from Houston. All right, here's the Welch family. Let's get down.
Jesus was a pagan, Woody was a punk. Gandhi was a soldier, Hendrix was a monk. Leonardo was an alien, Plato was a scream.
Check.
Was that on Sunday?
Yes.
What was that?
Well, it's for this foundation that Phoebe's working with, basically that she started. They work with the Amala Foundation here, and I think the One World Music Project, but her deal is called Fuel Our Fire, and they bring over like refugee kids from Africa and do song workshops and
that's awesome.
And record them all, and then kind of partnering with my Soldier Songs.
Right. How's that going?
Deal. Oh, it's fantastic. Kind of running into some issues, just trying to get our 501c3 established. I had been working under a different outfit for a while, but then finally kind of had been established on our own. So
is there with some like there's so many nonprofits here that involve music? I mean, like I went to this event like earlier in the year. I might be overstating. There's like 150, like nonprofits that have to do music
so.
In this town.
Yeah.
Like it's like an insane amount. But with that, is there some kind of support system that you can go to, like to sort of like help you navigate that 501c3?
That's a good question.
There's another organization called Green Lights. Uh-huh. I haven't messed with them at all, but they're. They advise nonprofits and they hold like seminars and classes.
That's funny. Is there a nonprofit that helps people start nonprofits?
It is, yeah, exactly. It's funny. Then we've got like a law firm that took us on pro bono and has been helping us with all the legal side of stuff.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's based out of San Marcos, right? Or based in
basically, it's, okay. It just kind of follows me around wherever I go.
Oh, okay.
It's based like a foot above my head.
Yeah, and people can find it by going to DustinWelch.com. But is there a specific website for it?
SoldierSongsAndVoices.org.
Okay.
Yeah.
SoldierSongsAndVoices.org. And you have a songwriting class. You have songwriting classes, almost like retreats.
I do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you tell me about
that? Because I started looking at it, and then I started like having these weird. Why? That's the most asked question on this show.
Did you just fart or something?
I didn't know if we were recording or not. I just didn't know.
That's what I
just hold it in for a
makes
little while.
It's so easy.
Nobody tells me what's happening.
I love having a family on here. So your songwriting camps, you do them out at your place in Wimberley, but then you also do them other places, right?
Yeah. Maybe, you know, I don't know. It's kind of whenever we have a good idea about someplace else to do them. You know, I've done them in the UK. I've done them in New Zealand and Australia.
Did you in the 90s go to that Miles Copeland castle?
I never did.
I never did either.
Yeah, I was always kind of right on the cusp of maybe going invited. To that, you know. Yeah. And so...
There was that one thing though, the Song Island deal that I think Troy Campbell's involved was involved with early on.
That kind of came out of, was it called Song Island? Yeah, Song Island's what it was called, and now Troy's thing is called House of Songs.
Right.
And that sort of was an extension of that. And that was just this annual thing on this island called Samso off the Danish coast.
Now, you made a record out there, right?
We did, yeah. And that was great because it would be people coming in from, the States and the UK and Canada, what have you, and then a lot of Scandinavian writers and maybe some people from the Netherlands or whatever. And so part of that was working with primarily Scandinavian writers who were trying to get better at writing in English.
Yeah.
And which is, you know, it's hard. It's hard to write in one's first language.
Yeah.
And then to try to move that over to another language is, it's a whole other bunch of perils that you run into. But these songwriter workshops of mine really came about because I live on a kind of a nice spread out in Wimberley that really by all rights I don't deserve and can't afford, you know. And I was living in this, there's a little one-room cabin on that place that I really love, and I was living there for about 3 years. And renting the main house out to this family. And at some point, they decided that they were going to leave. They lived there for probably 4 or 5 years, I bet. And they were going to move to Hawaii. And I was standing out on the little front porch of the cabin one day. And while the guy that, you know, lived in the main mm-hmm. house was out cutting the grass. And I'm just standing there. And I guess in the back of my mind, I was thinking, how can I stay here, you know? Yeah. Do I have to find somebody else to rent this house? And he turns off the lawnmower and he comes over and he said, you know, I was thinking, you ought to have like songwriter camps or something out here. And I said, oh, okay, Lee, I'll think about that. And then he went back and started cutting the grass, and the idea just kind of kept growing, and I started talking to people. And I finally realized, you know, I think I could actually do that.
Yeah.
I taught a few times and enough to know that it's a lot harder to talk about than you think it's going to be.
Yeah.
Talking about songwriting really a moving target. And
yeah, because songs can do anything at all. Really.
And yeah, and you can write any kind of song, and there are no rules to the thing. Yeah. So
you could sit there and tell someone how to tell a story, and then all of a sudden they'll go like, what about Yellow Matter Custard?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, what about that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so, you know, when I first started, I was pretty stumped. You know, I was really having to think really, really hard about how do you talk. The what helped me was coming up as a staff writer in Nashville for so many years, so that every single song I wrote or that any of my friends wrote, they were all gone over with a fine-tooth comb and critiqued, you know, not necessarily in a mean way, but everybody had their opinions. And so, I mean, you went over every single song word by word by word. And I just got used to that kind of evaluation and stopped.
I was going to use the word scrutiny. But
scrutiny's good, yeah.
Evaluation's much nicer.
So I got, a long time ago, I got sort of cauterized to that and to the point where I didn't take it personally anymore.
Yeah.
I realized it's really about the song and not the writer.
Yeah.
And so I don't feel bad about
tearing somebody to shreds.
Yeah. Oh God, I was just brutal at the very beginning. I didn't understand. I forgot that everybody else hadn't had that same experience.
Right. Right. Wow.
So yeah, I do about 4 or 5 a year at my place. And then sometimes on tour we'll set up a couple someplace.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
And have you guys been touring? You guys have been touring together, right?
A lot. Years?
Yeah.
Yeah, for a couple of years now.
Do you guys do those together?
Mm-hmm.
Like, sometimes. Did you all participate in it?
Savannah too.
We've all sat in on the ones in Wembley. There was one we did up in Taos for about 3 years with Eliza Gilkes and the three of us,
right?
Eliza was, she, you know, everybody has their own ways of looking at it and their own ways of teaching, but Eliza's great at it,
and
she knows how to like go, okay, what I really liked, you know, was this, and you know, and first, you know, tell them all the things that she loves about it, and then she'll go, but maybe not think about, and she puts it in a really kind way.
But really, really...
digs in.
Yeah, she's very aware and real, real super sharp. We've had a lot of great help, man. The last one I did was Jason Eady and Courtney Patton, and before that it was Walt Wilkins. And Walt and I were just kind of like clones. I mean, we would say exactly the same stuff. The same word would stick out. And let's see, who else?
It's the matching beards, I think.
Yeah, I am not Walt Wilkins. Keith Sykes came and did one. Butch Hancock. And
I was on that one with Butch.
Yeah, Savannah helped with that one. Bill Kirchen came to that one as well. And
what do you do when you what like? When you say you come and help, like, are you, is there like the three guys sit up and kind of like talk about the process? And
I talk to people to everybody as a group for a couple hours in the morning, and then everybody scatters. So, and they just scatter out all over the property, and they find if they either hook up with one of the other writers or they write by themselves or whatever. And we just kind of circulate amongst them all, leave them alone, you know, give them their room to dream around on it, and then but drop in and just check and see what's going on and talk about it with them, and then leave them alone again.
Right.
And then half hour later or something, somebody else will drop in, oftentimes with completely opposite opinions.
Yeah,
you know, because that's the way it works. You know?
I think the one that you were on, somebody was telling me, one of the workshoppers, they were saying it was like. Pops came down, said something, then you came down, and you said, well, that's terrible advice. No, don't do that at all. Do it like this instead.
Don't listen to him.
Well, it's so funny. It must be... I watched a video, and I mean, I know Savannah and Dustin, and you can always tell when someone does something with their parent.
Mm.
Like, I moved as far away from my dad as possible.
Yeah.
And, like, my cousin Eric is a great example. Like, when he got married, his dad was his best man. And that's, like, unfathomable to me. Like, I don't even want my dad to come.
Yeah, I was his best man.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's... it must be awesome for you to get to see that. And now you guys are in your own right, your own songwriters. Great songwriters.
Mm. Right.
You know?
Yeah, they got their own thing going.
Yeah, I mean, that must be amazing. And I was watching a video where you were talking about how special it was to have both of them on your last album.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was, The Blood.
Yeah.
I remember when, it's like, maybe the first time I opened up for John D. Graham, he came up and he was like, man, when you first moved to town, I wanted to just hate you. You know, I just figured you were going to be another clone of, you know, a photocopy of a photocopy of your parent. And he's like, I really, really wanted to hate you. And he said, God damn it, then I heard you.
Yeah.
And he said, you got your own thing, man. But, I don't want John I don't want John D. to hate me.
No.
Shoot.
No,
I don't want that.
No. I've always been scared of that happening.
I was a little scared of him. You know, the very first time I saw John D. play at the Continental Club, I think maybe I had just moved here or I was just visiting from Nashville or something, and I thought he was, you know, just great and fearsome.
Yeah.
Fearsomely great, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And I made myself go back after the set to introduce myself and compliment him and stuff, and of course, he was just as sweet as he could be.
Yeah, he's the sweetest guy.
But I had to really work up a little courage
after he had just dug a 6-foot trench in the stage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we're getting to play his. He and William put on their like Christmas jam.
Oh right,
every
when
year,
is that?
Like the family jam kind of thing.
The 21st over at Strange Brew.
Okay. But oh, right. I saw that you were playing that. Okay.
There's like, you know, Bucca and Bale Allen and...
the Allens, the Gilmores.
Yep.
The
Jimmy Dale and Colin. I know James and Curtis McMurtry are playing.
Yes. Yeah.
Us and...
Just going to be a big old love fest.
I feel like I'm forgetting somebody.
I kind of do, too. Well, maybe we'll think of it here in a second.
Sextons aren't on it.
No.
They have been in the past. Mm-hmm.
So I guess he does that a lot. William's definitely his own guy.
Yeah.
He's really amazing.
William is quite amazing.
Yeah.
I'm pretty convinced that he's going to be actually running the city of Austin here before too long.
Yeah, I don't even know if it's like he's so good at everything that it's kind of like, I don't know what he's going to do. What if he goes to college and like comes out and he's like, oh, you know, I figured I'd be a
dentist.
Yeah. I guess that's great.
Yeah.
Like, it's so disappointing to someone like me. You're a dentist? Who does that? So at your show, at your family show, what do you guys do?
We take turns. We swap, songs and back each other up as best we can. Like when me and Dustin go out, it's just, you know, two guys swapping songs and playing on each other's stuff.
Okay.
And then when Vanny joins us, it just, you know, gets that much longer.
Well, I make them cut out a few of their songs each.
Do you guys rehearse for that? Do you rehearse for something like that?
We have this year.
Yeah.
A lot of times it's kind of been cobbled together, but we've realized like maybe we actually need to be a little professional about it.
Yeah, people are really kind, you know, to us.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah. People are real forgiving, and I guess they think it's charming. Oh, look at this guy and his kids and stuff. And,
yeah.
But, you know, if we're up there and it's just train wreck after train wreck, you know, but it's not exactly.
I've seen you do stuff with people.
No,
it's great, and I mean, I've played stuff with you, and you're such a great musician. I don't see, but
I'm, don't rehearse,
you guys.
A lot of it, you know, it was because you know we just go, oh yeah, yeah, we know each other's songs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, which we do. We know each other's songs, mm-hmm. But then we get up there, and it's just like, shit, what key is this in? And like, are you doing this? What should I do? Oh, this is a different groove.
Yeah.
Oh, you're singing. Okay, and
can I borrow your capo?
Am I singing this part? Are you singing this part? You know, and it's just not rehearsed.
How long have you guys been doing that? Like that? Like, is there like a voice? Like, do you guys harmonize together? And is there just a place where everyone falls into place when they sing, like a family?
That's the goal.
Like my fantasy.
Yeah, that's okay. The goal. That does happen. Some.
Honestly, we're not quite there yet. I know what you're talking about, and if we keep doing this, I think we're on the cusp of that. Yeah. We're on the verge of that.
A lot of times, like when I feel like when I'm singing harmony with my dad, there's a spot that I usually always grab, you know, just kind of there's a spot that feels
male female stuff to. It's really easy, isn't it? I mean, if I'm gonna try to sing harmony with a woman, it's pretty much I just open up my mouth and I'm in the harmony range. So I think you and I it's pretty easy, and
it's Johnny's fantasy. Let's just tell him.
Do you know?
The hills are alive.
I just wanted to be like you know, like the Wilson family without the violence.
Yeah,
psychotic stuff.
Dead violence.
So when did you like? You guys were born in Nashville,
right?
When you were a staff writer.
Yes.
Okay. And you were married at the time.
Yep.
And when you guys came out, how soon do you remember knowing what your dad did? Even if it was just like he sings around the house all the time, or?
We were going and seeing him play, from an early age.
All right.
I have little like memories. I've got, you know, kind of flashes of things. And, there's a song of my dad's, what was the song? 1 foot in front of the other, baby. I Came Straight to You was the name of it.
Yeah.
And I remember we were driving to Oklahoma, and I was in the car seat, and I was dancing so hard to that song that Dustin was like, stop it! It was so loud. My car seat was squeaking. And I just remember Mom like going around this bend real fast, and Mom and I could see her in the mirror, and like we were getting it.
Yeah.
And we were grooving, and Dustin was like, ah, you guys are loud. And I remember that. I remember just getting down.
She used to drive me crazy. She would sing in the car. So my mother, she would sing along to the stuff so loud and just She couldn't carry the tune at all, but she didn't bother her a bit. She would get way into it. Yeah, like we would we'd be listening to his records all the time, you know, and I would sit on the couch watching CMT for hours and hours on end, just waiting for his video to come on or something.
I remember falling asleep in a sleeping bag, I guess, in the balcony of 3rd and Lindsley.
Yeah.
One night. You know, but it was like the Nicholson boys. For some reason, it was like a bunch of kids, and we were all like being put to bed.
Right.
You know, during the show. Yeah. Or whatever. That's so cool. But there's little things like flashes like that that I've
got. Oh, that's back when the balcony was there. Right. It took me a minute to remember that.
There's a great picture. I'm a baby. I'm sleeping like backstage in an empty bass guitar case. They just laid me in
there.
Wasn't
there a picture of Charlie or something like that with the Trishas?
Yeah. Well, poor Charlie. One time I was trying to put him down to bed, and he was a baby, you know. So I was like, somebody get the mandolin case. And he's a long kid because Jeff is 6'6", you know, but I'm like, he's a baby, so we need the mandolin case. I try to, like, lay him down, and he completely was way too big for the mandolin case. And I was like, shit, and I was trying not to wake him up. I was like, get the guitar case. And sorry, the guitar case. Still too big for the guitar case. I was like, we need a bass case. Like, that's the picture I have of you, you know. And Trish's don't have a bass player, so. I don't know where I put him to bed that night.
Inside of the kick drum or something.
Yeah. Maggie slept inside the kick drum case all the time.
Really?
Yeah.
How soon did you know that you wanted to do this?
It didn't take very long, really. I think I really got kind of serious about it when I was probably about 8 or 9, I think.
That's pretty early.
I was pretty much all in at that point. There was a couple of years later, he calls me up from some dingy, like, you know, basement green room that's, you know, with the leaky roof or something.
Yeah.
He's like, son, really, are you sure this is a good idea? I'm really trying to talk you out of this right now. There's no stopping me at that point. Now, you know, I'm kind of rethinking the whole thing. But
going to dental school.
I tried to tell you.
But it got to the point where it was like, you know, even at that age, he would still, you know, I'd still make him come and like read to me as I'm going to sleep. And around there, around that time, it got to be where, like, no, you teach me a song every night.
Oh, that's cool.
And then the next day I'd just work on it. And, okay, here's what I figured out. And then he'd have to show me another one.
Yeah.
He never did that for me.
Well, I don't think you ever asked.
Oh, this is the stuff I was looking for. No, the airing of grievances.
I told him I was going to weep for an hour. I didn't ask.
Yeah,
I didn't ask until I was like a sophomore in high school.
Yeah,
and I was like, okay, you just teach me a song.
But made sure, like, how old were you when you got that first guitar? Was it the Baby Taylor?
You were well into high school.
I think I was. I think I was probably 14.
Yeah,
I wasn't. Yeah, maybe 14 or 15. I got a guitar for Christmas.
Did you act then?
Theater. I mean, in high school theater.
That's. I mean, that's Nashville. A thing.
Yeah. I mean, I sucked.
She acted out.
You did.
It was not good.
Like high school acting. Like high school stage acting.
Yeah. Not. Yeah.
I know. Exactly.
I failed at that miserably. I mean, you know, we had a pretty good little theater department, and the theater teacher had been there for years, and everybody called her Mama Reeves.
Mama Reeves.
Like, you know, she was a coach for Reese Witherspoon when she was a little one, and she'd coach some of the, like, film actors that had come through town, and she was, you know, good
It was
lady.
A pretty legit operation.
Yeah,
cool. Yeah.
But she always would just tell me, like, you're not a theater actor, you're not... And you're doing it wrong, and you're trying to film act on stage, and it's not working.
Okay.
And you suck, and watch everybody and do what they're doing. And I just couldn't. I don't know. I just, it wasn't in me.
It's a whole different thing.
It is a whole different thing.
You were made for a film acting, though.
I feel like sometimes when people are too genuine, they can't do that. You know what I mean? Like that real. Like you have a big, huge smile, but it's real. Mm-hmm. You don't have like a Broadway smile.
Yeah. It's hard for me to do. I mean, in theater, yeah, you have to use your voice and your body and everything. And
everything's just that much more exaggerated.
I was like, we would never do any of that if we were just sitting down having a meal.
No.
Or, you know, whatever. Like, I just kept trying to bring it back to this realistic, like,
will
real...
Will you please pass the potatoes?
Yeah. Like, no. You know.
Yeah, it's all that much more exaggerated.
I'm just
going to
sit on the fence and let's talk about the moon or whatever. I just, you know, I couldn't do it. And that's not to bash... the people that are great at that. I've always wanted to go back to theater and try that again because I have so much respect for it. But when I moved to Austin, I was like, okay, maybe I'll just try this film acting thing because that's what she kept saying was you're trying to film act.
Right.
So. You're so much more like, you're so good at that subtle stuff.
Yeah.
Like every tiny little thing, little moves that you make. And that goes a long way.
I don't know if it's just because I know you. But like that, when you were like in Boyhood, I saw you on like a giant screen, which that was really amazing. It makes the hair on my arm stand up just talking about it. Like it was really moving. And then I was like, wow, she's really good. Oh, wow, she's so cute. Like, you know what I mean?
Thank you.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing.
It's weird sometimes, like especially like early on, she would be kind of reading her sides. And you know, and I'd be kind of reading with her, and it would be like all of a sudden it's like, where did my sister go? All of a sudden, who is standing in front of me right now?
Hey, I want to ask you some questions about staff writing. Sorry to change the subject real fast, but I wanted to. The acting drew me to the thought of the show Nashville.
Yeah,
and then I thought, like, did you leave there, like? With a finger up or something when you moved here? Like, I can't do this.
You know, I think...
thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I... See, like, I only exclusively worked on a staff for the first 10 years or so.
But they were a big 10 years.
Right. And it was big school for me, you know, and that was... fine for me. That's really what I wanted to do because I just didn't want to join ranks with what was happening in the mainstream in those years. And then it changed for a minute. You know, it got kind of, we had a few minutes where it got interesting. And so that's...
Great credibility scare.
Yeah. With Steve. Yeah. Yeah. Steve called that. Yeah. It was quick, man. I mean... What, maybe 3 years, well, 2 years or something?
Is that like the time when like Steve Earle, Dwight Yoakam,
Lyle, Nancy
Griffith. Yeah. O'Kane. I know exactly what you're talking about.
And, yeah.
What was the lady? I had dinner with her one night and her husband. She's really nice.
Kathy Mattea?
Roseanne? Michelle Schacht.
Oh, Michelle. Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, it was really, all of a sudden it got really interesting. So I started making records and, but kind of kept... my hand in the game. We all left our major labels in the mid-90s and we made Dead Reckoning Records.
Right.
And
that's still going.
In a way. At the moment, it's more of almost a holding company.
Right.
But we
made like, what, 23 albums or something for that?
I label? Think so, yeah.
Somewhere in there.
Yeah. It was really, really great. It was a really nice run. But the reason we did that in 95 was because the writing was on the wall back then. We could see the corporate direction that this was all going to and the declining, eventual decline in sales and all this stuff. It was all pretty obvious. And so that's when we decided sort of to cut bait in 95. But we still were in, you know, we were still involved and, you know, still getting songs recorded now and then, pitching songs and... co-writing with people and you know, still kind of being involved. But when I finally decided to leave, I think that must have been about 2008, I think. And I think that I had come to the conclusion that there was nothing going on at all in the mainstream Music Row stuff that I wanted to even know about, let alone be involved in. And that's just me. I know a lot of people that are still involved in it, and it's fulfilling to them. And so I'm saying, you know, more power to you.
Well, yeah. To me, though, that town's always been like a town with two stories, like a two-story town. Like there's this MCA, you know, Warner Brothers world. And then like under there, there's just all this fucking awesome rock and awesome indie music, awesome alternative country music, Americana music, like just really great shit going on.
Great stuff. The absolute
guys like Jay Joyce live there.
Yeah. World class. You know, lately I've been taking recording projects back there. In fact, because I've been missing my old monster friends. And you know, you get to where you just the idea of calling up arguably, you know, one of the all-time great piano players or one of the best bass players on the planet, or you know, you name it. You know, you can just do that all day long. And so you're absolutely right. There's always been a sub scene there or an alt scene. And these days, especially over on the east side. It's really, really super strong. And, you know, and we used to say this when we were in Nashville. We would go, say, to go to Europe, and people would find out that we were from Nashville, not Austin. And so they would think, Nashville, oh, you're one of those guys.
Right.
And you know, Austin was always getting such the great press all the time. But if at any time you just look at, for instance, the Americana charts, and you just start going down the list, most of those people, most of the greats that are on that chart are living in Nashville.
Yeah. They might be from Texas, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Guy, Prine, Emmylou, Gillian and David.
Yeah.
Todd.
Todd Snyder.
Yeah, it just goes on and on and on and on and on. So, yeah, man, it's... And lately I've been kind of missing it, so that's another reason, I guess, why I've been going back some, but...
What are you recording now when you said you're going back there? Are you producing people?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool.
I'm working on these Jason Eady records the last few years.
Okay.
Jason really likes to make real, real country records. So that's been really fun, man.
Are you recording live? You know, like
pretty much, yeah. This one we're working on right now, we just cut very bare bones with Jason playing acoustic and just acoustic guitar, bass, and drums. And not even drums, just, you know, like, what do you call those little...
Cajon.
Yeah, cajon.
Yeah.
I've never learned that word for some reason. And at the moment, Lloyd Maines is playing steel on him.
Oh, cool.
On these tracks. Lloyd, man. Really, really one of the living masters of the pedal steel guitar.
Yeah. Yeah, he's amazing. One time I saw him at something I was playing after him and what's the blonde lady that he plays with?
Yeah.
I know.
Terry Hendricks.
Terry, yeah. She's really good. And I said, hi, Terry. And then I went, hey, man, because I didn't know I didn't think he would know. And he goes, hey, Johnny. And I was like,
yay.
Little poop came out.
Yeah, for like a week, I was like, hey, did I tell you that saw Lloyd Maines the other day? Oh, yeah, how's he doing? I don't know, but he was like, hey, Johnny. And I was like, I'm not going to screw this up. I'm not going to say anything else to him. So, that guy's an amazing talent. Hey, let me ask you this. When you
so
guys
blew him off for the rest of the night.
Yeah, yeah, he was trying to talk to me. I'm like, I've actually done that to a couple of people where, like, I know I've done well, and that's it. Like, I'm going to leave on a high note. Like, but I can't leave. I'm still there. On A Patch of Blue Sky, which is the last record that you, the last solo record that you made, and you guys did that together, and the band was, who's the drummer guy?
Rick Richards.
Rick, yeah.
I don't... Is he... He's from here?
He is.
Mm-hmm.
Who else does he play with?
Well, he played with Ray for a long time.
Oh, okay.
And then wasn't he? He was out playing with Joe
Walsh.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Rick's, you know, he's a real good go-to drummer if you're going to be recording around here.
And yeah.
Very solid. You know, he knows how to tune the tubs, you know.
That's an important thing.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
It's not something no one really tells you about it until someday you come across a guy that's like, oh, these drums sound like shit. And you're like, yeah. And then all of a sudden you're like, whoa, how'd you make them sound like that?
Yeah, yeah.
It happened to me in like my 20s.
I had the opportunity to work with a guy named Frank Marstock, who's a Norwegian guy, and played with Marstock off and on for many, many years. In fact, he was just here and went out and played with me and Dustin and Gumby at the Fisher Fest.
Oh, Gumby plays with you guys?
Now he does, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
he's playing with us on the Welch Christmas Run.
He is?
Yeah.
I fucking love that guy.
I do too, yeah. It's been a great, anyway, but we didn't have any drums for Marstock, so we gave him a cardboard box.
He went and found an empty Shiner beer box, and just...
That's what I like.
Just put a mic on it.
Yeah.
Over the years, he's been on many stages with me just playing a box. But what the point is, when I first heard his drums, he had almost like this little toy drum set, and they sounded terrible. I mean, really sounded terrible.
Like not cool terrible, but terrible.
Yeah,
terrible.
Just terrible. Until I heard them coming through, going through the mic, hitting the compressors,
right,
and realized that he was just extremely savvy about tuning, and he was tuning for that very thing. And so at the end of the chain, he sounded like Russ Kunkel.
Yeah.
But standing right next to him, it was like, you got to be kidding me.
That's wild.
Yeah.
I wonder if Russ Kunkel's drums sound terrible when you stand next to him.
Probably not, actually.
And Glenn Fukunaga played on it. And and Bucca, mm-hmm. Alan, and then you guys sang on it, the Trishas.
Yeah.
And there was something I was going to ask you. What dictates... You had drums on that whole record, right? Because I was listening to a bunch of different stuff today on my way home.
Mm. Yeah, just about the whole thing.
And did the record before you didn't have drums?
So I made 3 records in a row with Kieran, Kane, and Fats Kaplan.
Right.
And the first 2 of those records, we would sometimes we'd let a microphone just kind of pick up Kieran's foot, or we would actually go back in, you know, as soon as we cut the track, because those were live, sitting in a circle, tons of bleed, usually no headphones, really, really super fast recording, and so we'd play the song, and if it was okay, somebody would stay in the chair and, you know, maybe hit something,
right?
You know, and that was the extent of the drums. Also, no bass,
right?
Because we had low tuned instruments and so forth. So there was plenty of low end happening. And then the third record, we brought in Kieran's son, Lucas, and he plays really, really quiet, real simple drums, almost just like rims, just tapping.
Yeah.
And so they were almost drumless, but they were still very groove records.
Yeah.
Kieran is like this, he's a total groove monkey.
That's good.
Yeah.
Groove monkey is a good name, too, for someone.
Yeah. He is. I mean, have you ever done that, like you play a track with no drums, mm-hmm. no timekeeper or whatever, then you go back in and you try to play percussion, and you can feel it just kind of fishtailing around. Yeah. With Kieran...
It's not,
you know, he's a lock.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's the studio? Was that the studio where Jeremy did his record? Where you guys did A Patch of Blue Sky?
Cedar Creek.
We cut tracks up at the ranch.
Isn't that where Jeremy was working? It looked like the place I went and sang on.
And then we worked at Cedar Creek after that.
Did he just cut it Cedar Creek or
no?
No,
it was out in kind of in Wimberley, I thought.
I can't remember where they were cutting. That could...
It looked like it.
Were you ever at the ranch on Highway 12, Dad?
No.
No.
No, this is the different ranch up north of here.
Oh, okay. Then I'm wrong. No, I was thinking of a different place.
And we cut like some at Brian and Bucca's room.
Oh, yeah. They still have the place going on?
Screen Door.
Yeah.
I think so. I know it got flooded recently.
They did, yeah.
But I don't know.
Oh, and Brian's kind of been doing it.
Yeah.
More. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a fun place.
Yeah.
I wonder where Jeremy was. Maybe that was the Zone or something.
Oh, the Zone is what
possibly,
I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
That's where it was.
Yeah, the Zone's a
that's
nice
what
place.
That's a nice place.
Yeah. Pat Mansky.
Yeah, I can't remember who that engineer was, but he was real nice.
Yeah.
Alejandro was ridiculing me when I was there, so I was not feeling good. No, I'm joking.
Yeah, because Al produced that
he
stuff,
did.
Right? Yeah. I can't wait to hear it. I'm a huge fan of Jeremy's.
I heard one tune, me too. I heard one tune, like in a car.
Mm.
I was really drunk.
Mm. Let's hope you were driving.
I really like it. No. It was like, I was taking an Uber. He was like, he wasn't drunk. He was like, I was like, come on, man, you got to let me hear something. He's like, all right, come out to the car. And he played me a tune.
Wow.
Yeah. I was like, give me your keys, man. I'm going to listen to your album while I'm drunk driving.
Vroom, vroom.
Throughout the city of Austin. Okay, so you guys are doing, is it called the Welch Family Throwdown?
I guess so.
By default, I think it's called that, yeah.
And do you sing any Christmas songs? Is it Christmas themed, or you just do it at this time of year?
We've got a couple songs that are sort of that might mention Christmas or something, or something around the holidays. But you know, like we figure, everywhere you go, around this time of the year, you're hearing that stuff, and so you know, you're kind of taken care of in that department.
We do a song called Santa Had a Dream that me and Savannah wrote when she was in eighth grade.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah. But it's a weird, weird song. It's a weird story. It's, yeah. If anybody ever listens to the lyrics, it'd be kind of tripped out.
It was a creative writing class. And so we had like a choice of what kind of piece of writing we were going to turn in. So it was like an essay, a vignette, a short story. Song was one of them, and I was like, well, that's easy. That's the shortest thing.
Yeah.
I was going to hammer out this song. It was an easy grade kind of thing. And part of your grade was also to come up with a melody for it. Because song, they thought, oh, well, song, it's one page of writing. I mean, it's like the shortest in terms of like how many words or whatever, and they said, so part of your grade, if you choose a song, is to come up with a melody and turn in a recording of it.
Right.
And so my dad and I co-wrote this song, and then he cut it in the studio with a full band.
Oh, wow.
And so the CD says like Sony Tree on it, and you know, I was a kid.
A little unfair, wasn't it? It was kind of like
everybody else is bringing in their little cassette beatbox recordings.
That's
or
cool,
something,
though.
You know,
yeah,
it's playing on a Casio keyboard with the
right.
But it was a cool, pretty cool song. You know, it wasn't like they were recording this, you know, kind of dinky little thing. It was, you know, it was a pretty cool little tune.
Do we still have that recording?
No idea.
We recut it when I came to Austin. We're raising money for something. What was it?
It was that first Ham Christmas album.
The first Ham Christmas album.
That Shane.
Yeah,
Matt does.
I remember that.
Yeah, Shane Mott.
Yeah, so we recut it then. It's floating around out there.
So it's out there.
Yeah.
It's available. What's it called again?
Spotify.
Santa Had a Dream.
Yeah, it's on Spotify. Santa Had a Dream. You know what? I'm going to make a Christmas mix. I'm going to put that on there. Santa Had a Dream.
Okay. It sounds Christmassy as long as you don't listen to the words.
I had that feeling last night. I don't know what happened to me. Because I used to like Christmas music. And then like one day I woke up and I was like, first of all, it starts like at Thanksgiving. Like there's like stations that you're scanning. And then it's just like Christmas music. And then all of a sudden everywhere, the grocery store, the mall, everywhere I hang out. I'm hanging out at the mall. It's just Christmas music built up. And then, like, last night we were playing this this party, and we were playing, like, when you're playing Last Christmas by Wham, you really start rethinking your life and what you've done with it. And so I was sitting there playing, and all I could think was, like, does anybody really need to hear this? Because throughout the whole hotel was Christmas music. Anyway, I was like, yeah. What do you think? I mean, you got a kid, you got Charlie. This is like the time. It's like he's like, oh, come on, Santa Claus is coming to town.
Charlie loves Christmas music. I mean, he's like asking me for Jingle Bells and the Red Nose song.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I mean, and he's learning them elsewhere. And, you know, nothing against Christmas music, but I wasn't going to be like, now this is the time that we listen to these songs and we're going to learn this one. I wasn't going to do that to him, or, you know, if he picks it up, fine.
Right.
But it's like now when we're in the car, and if I don't say, hey, during Jingle Bells, we have to rewind it. You know, I mean, it's like I'm full on just like, okay, now what with the Christmas tunes this year?
Yeah. I don't see you rocking Christmas tunes throughout your house or apartment.
Oh, no. I've
bungalow.
Michael Bublé is just hanging out in
your bathroom.
He's just standing there in the bathroom while I'm in the shower and crooning to me.
There's a few songs. You know what I like? I like Phil Spector Christmas album. But that's just because Phil Spector stuff.
Well, we just put up the Christmas tree at our place the other day, and I had to put on the Elvis Christmas record.
That's a good
the
one.
Whole time. That
There's
was,
some
that
good
was
stuff.
Good.
You
yeah.
just, you gotta find it.
There was
you
a Leon Redbone Christmas record I used to have that was really fun.
Did Dustin and Savannah ever go through like a New Kids on the Block phase? It was no.
Yeah, I don't think so. Did you? I don't remember.
Did you guys
that.
Go to? You went to Waldorf school, right? Is that what you
Montessori?
Montessori school. Yeah. Okay. How long? Like, did you when you? Because
I mean, New
soon.
Kids. I was probably. I remember. I think I was like five.
Oh,
and I remember the older kids on the
about,
playground would be making up. New
then you
kids
would have been
dances.
Backstreet age.
Ada, our little sister, was Backstreet age. I took her to see the Backstreet Boys.
Yeah, she had a Spice Girls moment.
I did. Yeah.
Oh,
I did.
Yeah.
That was me.
I think I got you guys one year. You wanted a Spice Girls album, and so. So I got you that, but I also gave you a Go-Go's record.
See, there you go.
Yeah, just so you know, you know, these guys were
yeah, there's,
to this
there's,
thing.
Yeah, and then you gave me Fiona Apple.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
You know. But, I kind of missed the boy band thing. I was either too young or too old.
Yeah.
I don't know. I had friends that were into it. And,
I think I liked my own stupid music when I was a kid.
Are you asking him, like, if we like stupid music?
Yeah, you know, like, what happens to you, like, when you're, you know, when you're in the music, and music, you're not just like my dad, like, music means something to you, and if your kids have some shit-ass taste in music, it's a bummer. Like, you don't want to walk around hearing, like, Savannah crying about Bieber.
I remember seeing Frank Zappa on Johnny Carson a long, long time ago, I guess when his son was just
Weasel.
Getting started, right? And Zappa was not amused at all by what Dweezil was doing. I can't remember what he said, but I thought it was very funny.
That's funny.
He was suffering.
What Dweezil was playing.
Yeah. Like, Frank was suffering with it. Yeah.
Quick trivia for all you guys. Yeah. You know who's in that video? Charlie Sexton.
Oh, yeah.
He's in the Dweezil solo video.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Right on.
Wow. Thanks. I didn't know that. That's some good trivia.
Yeah, I bet he doesn't go around telling everyone, hey, remember that Dweezil Zappa song that Frank Zappa thought was terrible?
Yeah.
I'm in the video.
Yeah.
What are you listening to now? Is there anything that's catching you? Do you ever get guys at the songwriting thing where you keep up with them afterwards and you're like, hey, let's do a show?
Well, I do keep up with those people if they want me to.
You
know, if they're working on something and they want to run it by me, then they can do that. A few of the people, I just received a CD in the mail yesterday from a young woman who lives up in Rhode Island, just finished her first CD. So I haven't heard it yet because the only CD player I own is in my car, which is weird. But I've got a few CDs from former students, and that's really great.
Yeah. That must be a great feeling.
Yeah, it is. The coolest thing that's going on out of all of this, though, is what Dustin's doing with the Vets.
Yeah, that is amazing.
The songs that are coming out of that are really moving, and what's happening to these people sort of physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, across the board is pretty stunning. I mean, we all know, you know, that in quotes, you know, music is a healer,
yeah,
but as it turns out, it actually truly is, and it's fast. And
I got these guys doing gigs now.
Yeah,
I mean, it's awesome. It's really pretty cool. They're like, out of the one group that I host down in San Marcos, they pretty much all just kind of formed a band together. And there's one guy who, he put his own band together and has got like a, he's already got an EP recorded. He's out gigging all the time.
Wow.
He's got like a couple residencies going on. It's amazing. And like a couple years ago, to think about kind of where he was at with things.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's completely just turned him around. It's you know, he's doing great. And you know, he's like, he just made a video and people love it, you know, like, and especially because, you know, a lot of times he'll kind of tell his story and he'll kind of talk about the program too. And people are just like, you know, just standing ovation song right. after song.
Mm.
Yeah, that's been really awesome to see.
Yeah, that must. What made you? How did you get involved? Did you know somebody that came back from?
Well, I mean, like the short answer is that you know, I didn't enlist myself, so just kind of going, well, maybe I could do this and you know, just yeah. try and work on the back end of things.
They don't want guys like you and me out there. They need absolutely. They need not. Us
yeah,
afterwards would, helping would, people that this thing's on.
Terrible. They would. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd be peeling potatoes. But you know, like the there's that. You remember that Voices of a Grateful Nation record? I think maybe it was 2010, 2009. No. I don't know. It was a bunch of Texas artists compilation album,
okay.
And it was mostly all a bunch of. Kind of, you know, welcome home, big,
right.
you know. But I had a song that was, I'd written about a returning Vietnam War vet, and it was more kind of the, you know, internalized kind of feeling of coming back to the world that they came back to, you know, where they, you know, they a lot of folks, they were there against their will to begin with, and then they come back. And you know, people are throwing eggs at them
yeah.
in the streets, and you know, that really kind of. I had written a song about that basically, and then just as an extension of that, I was going. So we're not going to replay that whole scenario again this time,
right?
You know, let's try and figure out a way to make sure. These folks are taken care of in some way.
Yeah.
And I just went, you know, the only thing I know how to do is write songs and play. Basically, that's pretty much all I know how to
and
do.
Apparently, and apparently awesome at peeling potatoes. rumor has it.
So fast.
So I kind of went, well, let's just see if we can round up some guitars and start doing this. And then really kind of then recognized the therapeutic benefits of it. And it was pretty amazing. So then now we've got chapters kind of all over the country springing up, and trying to just see if this can be you know, a recognized form of alternative therapy.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's not sort of officially recognized as music
okay.
therapy, right? Did you say?
Yeah, the VA still hadn't really come around to it, but they're beginning to.
We're taking this to Australia here in the early part of the year.
Oh, really?
I think their State Department's going to kind of help.
That's great.
Put this on. We'll do a string of, you know, just kind of around the country, do a string of workshops with their vets. Because, you know, those guys, you know, they went over and came back too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing. I mean, we were going to... Ireland, we were even in Germany, you know, interestingly enough, talking about that kind of stuff. But everywhere you go, yeah, there's still folks that had fought and and a lot of times, you know, didn't make it all the way back.
Right.
And so this is really, it's kind of a universal deal. Music is a universal language.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a good friend, an old tour manager of mine that enlisted like several times and is just in, you know, he's doing okay now, but he's had a rough time. Like
yeah.
Readjusting, coming back, being a family man and dealing with his family and,
yeah,
you know. Those things are hard.
Yeah, and that's
the VA doesn't really do much for yeah, you when you come back.
Yeah, the divorce rate, sadly, I think it's about 70% higher than
yeah.
with civilians,
which is already pretty. Well, high.
It's like so. It's like 180% or something. Yeah, right.
180% chance.
Yeah, you got 100. Come on, let's get married. Okay, so I'm gonna run down these dates that you guys are playing because I'm gonna put out this show on. This Monday.
Okay,
so, cool.
Thursday, December 17th, you'll be in Wimberley, Texas at Susanna's Kitchen, which is a place, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the Methodist Church out there. They have a concert oh, cool. series they do once a month. It's like on the corner of Highway 12 and
1492.
Okay.
Yeah.
Friday, December 18th at the Woodlands, Texas, Do-Si-Do, at the Do-Si-Do. That's a good place.
Yeah.
And then Saturday, December 19th in Fort Worth, Live Oak Music Hall and Lounge. And then you two are playing at the Steamboat Springs Music Festival in on January 5th?
I think it's the 5th, yeah.
Okay, well, between the 4th and the 9th.
Right? Yeah.
That's when that
we're going to do a little kind of three, like trio with Kelly McQuee.
Yeah, Kelly McQuee. Yeah.
Cool.
Of the Trishas.
Mm-hmm. That's right, yeah.
The Whispering Trisha, the Harpo Marx of the Trishas.
She couldn't speak. She lost her voice when we were in here.
So she used, I don't even know where that thing went.
She had a noise
machine.
I have
this little noise machine that does like fart sounds
like,
and stuff.
Wah, wah, wah. Yeah. Like,
she did a couple of them really well. Like there was a couple that made me laugh really hard.
And then we're at John D. and Williams thing.
Right.
Monday the 21st.
Monday, December 21st, mm-hmm. along with all of the families.
Yeah.
Right.
I won't be in town. You know, I'm going to be in the Woodlands. On December 19th.
Really?
So I'm playing in Houston that night. And on the 20th, at 10 o'clock in the morning, me, four of my cousins, and my Aunt Christina and my Uncle Chuck are going to see Star Wars.
Attaboy.
Like nerds.
Cool.
We got them the day that the tickets came out.
I'd go, man, in a heartbeat. Yeah.
So did they all live out there?
Yeah.
Nice.
They all live in the Woodlands.
Cool.
So yeah, the Woodlands is a great place. I'll tell them to come see you play.
Yeah,
although they don't go see people anymore.
Yeah,
people really they really peter out.
Come up a day early.
I'm going to be there the whole week after.
You know, you're an honorary Welch.
No, I know. I appreciate that. I'm playing it with right. I'm playing with Skyrocket in Houston that night, and we're playing here the Friday.
Yeah.
So we're playing the Do-Si-Do in the Woodlands.
Yes,
correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is there two?
There's another one.
There's one in Conroe.
Oh,
yeah.
I think, yeah, that's the one we did last year, but
right.
I believe.
I think so. Yeah.
Oh, we're at the Big Barn this year?
Yeah.
In
Conroe. Okay.
I believe so, yeah. I love those guys.
Yeah, really nice people down there, man. They're into it.
Yeah. I met somebody from, I can't remember who it was from there, at a thing in my band Skyrocket. They wanted us to do something there, but things didn't happen.
Mm.
Maybe it will someday.
Good. They've got a good green room. The one in Conroe's got a great green room, and they it's good food, real good food. They'll hand you bags of coffee. They roast their own coffee.
Audio's really good, both rooms. Yeah.
Are you guys working on anything new? Thank you.
Dustin is.
Well, we cut a whole bunch of stuff over in Copenhagen last year.
Oh, really?
And with the intention of getting back over there and finishing it all off, but that's not going to happen anytime soon. So we decided to go ahead and bring it into the studio here and try and put some of the finishing touches on it. But yeah, I've been kind of sitting on this thing for a little while, which is always aggravating. But
it is aggravating.
But you know, it'll happen when it happens.
It's hard, man, to have stuff in the can like that.
But it was cool, really cool, cutting with some of those. those crazy Scando musicians. They got a whole different way of going about things. Kind of like...
That's what I read about your thing, too.
Mm.
You said the same thing.
It's like really kind of lo-fi, high-tech.
Yeah.
High-tech, lo-fi. Complete abandon, but in a really seriously cool way.
Awesome.
Yeah, they're pretty fearless.
Well, people can find all of you guys, the KevinWelch.com, DustinWelch.com, TheTrishas.com. Mm-hmm. Is there anything I'm missing? Get out and see the Welch Family Throwdown, December 17th through 19th, Wimberley, Texas, The Woodlands, Texas, and Fort Worth, Texas.
Thanks for having us, Johnny.
Dude, thanks for coming.
Nice to see you,
man. Really good, yeah. Yeah, I want to... I don't know why it's intimidating. At first, this is what happened. When I saw your songwriting classes, I saw Eliza and then like Ray Wiley, I was like, oh, cool, they take classes from this dude? I want to go take classes with them from this guy. I literally did, and then I started reading this stuff, and I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
But still, I think that would be really interesting. I feel like there's really still stuff. Would you take it from someone?
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I suppose
so. Would you take a class, like, say, Nick Lowe? You like him?
Yeah, okay. love Nick Lowe.
Say he's got a class.
Yeah. I would love to find out what Nick Lowe has to say.
Yeah.
We've talked about doing that, because we all feel that way. Like, when I'm a guest teacher, I'm like, I was calling myself a student teacher.
Yeah.
You know, because I feel like we're all kind of, we all are on some level, but we've all, there's a lot of people that I know that are like, can I come take that class? You know, even though...
Yeah, you never want to stop learning.
Even though I'm a world-famous musician.
Even though I could teach my own class. But we've talked about trying to do something like with kind of workshop-y. You know, with a group of us.
Well, I feel like in my place, in my development as a songwriter, I've hit a place where I need new... things to reach for. And I realize that I don't have a group around me of people that I can throw things off of all the time
that's really vital, having a band.
It is important, you know, even if you're the songwriter of the band, you know, you can look at someone's face when you play them something you know, if you trust them, you go back to the drawing board. But
there's a couple like actual like structured groups that will meet up, you know, once a week or every couple weeks.
Really?
Of cool songwriters. There's one out at Blue Rock, Billy Crockett does, and it's all, you know, it's working musicians.
Yeah, that's what
everybody just kind of goes, well, this is what I'm working on. This is kind of what I'm thinking with it, and everybody can kind of just go, what do you think about doing this? And I think, yeah, that's always helpful. Or it can completely ruin everything.
Well, we should try and find some way to do like one of those castle things where you have to go and write a song with someone every day for like a week and get out of your element.
If you think,
I think that's what I need. I need to get out of my element.
Maybe you do, man. Yeah.
It's a cool room, but I'm done with it.
Think about it as a retreat instead of like a workshop or a class, but really just a getaway. Like you say, just put yourself in a different environment altogether, and maybe have to write on a different kind of instrument.
Yeah. You know, David told me. You know, David Garza.
Yeah.
He said. I told him this like 2 months ago. I was like, man, I'm in this place. I'm getting like weird with myself and like mad at myself, and then like I'm getting in a bad mood all day. And he was like, write on bass. It didn't do anything. I tried. I took his advice.
But
I didn't.
Yeah.
It didn't work. I need something more than just bass.
You know, gut string. Do you write on piano?
Yeah. I write on everything in here.
Yeah.
And there's other stuff in another place. That's bass.
Yeah. This is a good room.
Yeah,
man.
Thanks.
Well, collaborators, too. Interesting, because I'll sit down with somebody and they'll have a song started that I would have never started. Or I'll work in a style that is not like my go-to or my default style or whatever.
Yeah.
That's always kind of a cool practice. So
I need to do that. Branch out. Mm-hmm. Go find the challenges. Thanks, guys. This ended up working as like a little mini therapy session for Johnny. Thank you, Welch family. Not only are you entertaining, talented people, but you are also helpful when someone is in crisis. Welch family, throwdown going down this Christmas. KevinWelch.com, DustinWelch.com, TheTrishas.com. Thank you guys for coming. You can pick up their albums. Kevin's latest is Apache Blue Sky, Dustin's Tijuana Bible, and the Trisha's Tall, Wide, and Handsome, just like me. All right, thanks, you guys.
Thanks, Johnny.
Piaf was a siren, Callis was the sea.
Yeah. Kevin, Dustin, and Savannah Welch. I love those people. They are lovely, lovely people, extremely talented. Get out to the Welch Family Throwdown Thursday the 17th in Wimberley, Texas at Suzanne's Kitchen. Friday, December 18th, the Woodlands, Texas at the Do-Si-Doh. Saturday, December 19th in Fort Worth at the Live Oak Music Hall and Lounge. And don't forget, they will be performing along with other families, including John D. Graham, William Harris Graham, the Gilmores, the Allens, many other Austin musical families at Strange Brew Lounge Side, December 21st. So get out there and check that out, okay? The Welch family. Fantastic people. I want to thank them for coming by. I also want to thank my man Dwight Twilley for doing the Skype conversation with me at the beginning. That's pretty cool, right? Dwight Twilley. He's playing Thursday night, the 17th, at the Hole in the Wall in Austin. I am also playing Thursday night, the 17th, at the Townsend at 8 p.m., so I will be able to make it to the Dwight Twilley Show. All right, thank you guys so much for listening to the show. Let's hear some more music from Kevin Welch. This includes Dustin, Kevin. This song is called Apache Blue Sky from his album Apache Blue Sky. Have a great week. Got a lot of shows coming up. Canood Thursday and Calliope Musicals on Friday. Let's get down.
I'm gonna keep the beat.
patch of blue sky.